The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Thank you, as always, for listening today.
And we want to welcome back for the second time. This is another first for the Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
It's a twofer.
Same guest.
Really?
Two times. Ann Chertoff of Wedding Wire. Hello, Ann.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome back. Thanks for doing this again. So we recorded a few weeks ago. Was it a few weeks ago or 2 weeks ago? A few weeks
Three,
ago.
Three, I think. Yeah.
Wow, time flies.
I can't remember what pants I wore yesterday, so.
Yeah, and I literally am on my second sip of coffee, so this is just like, we'll see how this goes. That's good. Okay, so last time we recorded with Ann, because Ann, you are a wedding trends expert.
Yeah.
And we talked about your experience and things, you know, actually a lot about your experience and your journey, which was kind of cool. Very inspiring, actually, and just, you know, the trends that you're seeing and what you're kind of forecasting. And we got really a lot of people listened to that show. We got lots of lovely downloads. Thank you, people. Thank you, Anne. And so now what we did was we asked those people to get back to us with questions for you. And so we have quite a few.
Great.
So shall we just, like, you know, jump into it?
Yeah, we got some, like, pretty, like, quick fire questions, I feel like.
Okay, rapid fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, rapid fire. But we also got some that have a little bit more, like, backstory to them. So I'll start with a couple of those. Because on the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, we like to appeal to all the people planning their weddings, including second-time brides, gay and lesbian brides and grooms, pregnant brides, just like anyone in any situation, you can have a wedding, and we hope you're listening.
Everyone in love.
Yeah.
And any budget.
Yeah.
And any budget.
To that end.
We try to be very aware of that. So one of the questions I got was from a woman getting married for the second time. I'm getting married for the second time, and I had a pretty big traditional wedding the first time around, which I think is pretty common after you feel like you've done the huge, big thing. My fiance has never been married, so this wedding is shaping up to be fairly traditional, too, and at about 100 guests. I feel awkward doing certain things a second time, like my dad walking me down the aisle a second time and tons of pre- and post-ceremony photos. Since a lot of people in them were in the first ones with me.
Yeah.
I would assume entire family. And I'm also uncomfortable with any bridal celebrations before the wedding. I guess I think I'm asking too much of my girlfriends to do this all over for me again. Thoughts? Our wedding is in 6 months.
Wow.
Well, I think, one, you want to be comfortable with what you're doing, but I also think you want to acknowledge the fact that your fiance hasn't done this before and this is all new to him. So you want to have an honest conversation, an open conversation, and see, like, all right, do you really care if my dad walks me in the aisle? Do you really care if we do X, Y, or Z? And then just make a list of which of the traditions are important to him and ones that, you know, you might not be enthusiastic about, but you can live with. As for the other things like the pre-ceremony photos and a shower, that's entirely up to you, too. Just tell your bridesmaids, look, we've done this before. We don't have to do this again. I'd love to celebrate with you guys in some capacity, but instead of maybe a traditional shower, why don't we, you know, go on a mini vacation together? Or why don't we do something that's more relevant to our lives? Like maybe they became, you know, I don't know her age. So if, you know, mm-hmm. she's a lot older and now she loves cooking or wine tasting or something like that, maybe she can pick an activity more than a traditional bridal shower. And for photos, just cut back on the photo list. You know, maybe you don't need one with everyone, but these people are obviously important to you and a part of your life, and they've been in your life through your first marriage and now into your second, that I'm sure they want to celebrate with you. So just decide that, you know what, maybe you don't need a photo of you getting dressed, like, you know, in your underwear or whatever, because you've done that, but you should still have photos with your friends and the closest people to you.
Yeah, it sounds to me like these weddings are maybe only a couple years apart or less than 10 years, just by the worry that I'm asking my girlfriends to do too much. I think brides tend to worry about that stuff a lot more than is not necessary, but like their friends are the ones like, no, it's fine, we want to, like, it's not a bother. If you have a bunch of bridesmaids who are like, bitch, I'm not going to be in your wedding again, this is crazy, then you can change it up. But like,
and you would hope that your best friends would be able to say, bitch, you're crazy and we're not going to do this again.
Like, but we're not doing the whole thing again, but they would still be there for you. That's why they're your friends.
And you don't have to, you know, you can have bridesmaids, but they don't have to stand or walk down the aisle. You know, you can be like, look, I love you guys. I want to take photos with you guys. I want you to stand out as my, like, core group. But that doesn't mean you all have to wear the same dress. That doesn't mean that you have to carry flowers. So there's ways that you can incorporate your friends without making it feel like it's just, you know, your first wedding was a dress rehearsal and now you're doing it again. You know, we did a study and we found that bridesmaids spend on average $1,200 on every wedding. And a lot of that money goes into the dress and getting ready on the day of. So if you don't want them in that traditional role, that doesn't mean you can't have a bachelorette party or something like a shower or involve them in, you know, your dress search for yourself. You just want to figure out what you feel comfortable with. And if they can't be open and honest to be like, we don't want to do this, well, then that's not your fault.
Yeah, I think you can consider them VIPs, you know, like, you guys, you're all staying in the house with me and you're going to sit in the front row and we're going to take some fun pictures.
Or you're going to stare at the same table.
Yeah, but you're not.
Yeah, they're your honored.
We don't have a lot of obligations this time around.
Yeah, and if he wants to have traditional groomsmen because he's done that, he can do that. That, you know, they can act as ushers, helping people find their seat. That doesn't mean they have to walk anyone down the aisle.
And also, I think brides or humans, I mean, this last sentence, I guess I'm thinking I'm asking too much of my girlfriends to do this all again for me. I wonder how much of that is, whoever you are, you being hard on yourself in your own head. I mean, chances are you're not literally asking these women, hey, I need you to throw me a wedding shower. I need you to throw me a bachelorette party. I want you to buy a $700 gown and you need to be at the resort with me all weekend long. It's probably you putting too much, you know, on yourself, and these women are your best friends. They're the most important people to you, and they want to do things for you. And you should be able to just talk to them and be like, dude, it's my second time. You were in the first one, or maybe you weren't, but like, I'm not expecting.
I don't want to do this. Like, I just want to do this.
Yeah. Like, exactly. You know, I just love you guys, and like, I want you to be part of this because I love this man, and, you know, and this is my life. So don't be too hard on yourself.
And I think also a note, because this isn't just all about the wedding party, but the photos and just doing everything a second time, feeling like, oh, I already did this once, so can I wear a white dress and all that? There are no rules. Like, you can do whatever you want.
No.
But I think do talk to your photographer, even before you hire them, about, like, this is his first wedding. It's not my first wedding. There might be some things on that, like, master photo list you do that we're going to, you know, tweak a little bit, or it might be heavy on the groom photos instead of being heavy on the bride photos for this one. So I think talking to
your
photographer about
it
a little bit would help.
You should still take a decent amount of photos because this is your wedding day, and, you know, your parents are going to want a photo. His parents are going to want a photo. You're going to want photos. You're going to want an album. So you don't want to just be like, oh, I've I've already taken a photo of a first look. You should still do a first look. Remember, this is a new experience. This is, you know, you're getting married because you found someone that you love and you want to spend your life together. So I wouldn't diminish that element. I understand that maybe you feel like, oh, you've already, you know, thrown the bouquet to your bridesmaids and you don't feel like you want to do that, or you don't want to do a traditional shower because you already did a shower and maybe you don't need all those kinds of presents. But that's why you register for experiences, or you register for, you know, things that are against your hobby. You don't want to diminish the fact that you're getting married and having another wedding. You can just change it for reflect your current lifestyle and interest.
And doing a bridegroom shower together is also a fun option, just a party.
I love that.
Yeah, we did that. I loved it. We did too. It was awesome. And remember that first wedding? It's part of your history. It's part of your story. So do it again, you know, like have those photos and then have these new photos. It's just part of who you are.
Exactly.
Cool.
I think we should rename ourselves like Dr. Ruth, or like, I feel like.
try on your Russian accent, Michelle. She's going to practice that. Okay. The next two I have are actually both more fashion based. This one is,
okay.
I tried on a lot of wedding dresses and I finally settled on one. I like it. It suits my needs and tastes and the price is right. But everyone keeps asking me, oh, do you love it?
Yeah.
And I just don't have that kind of reaction. I don't feel like I'm reacting the way people expect of me. Like, do all brides just know the second that they put on a dress that all of their dress dreams have come true? Is there some magical moment that I missed?
I'm a firm believer that, like the guy with the dress, you'll just know it's the right one. And not from a practical point of view where it's like, oh, it's in with my budget and it flatters my figure and it crosses off all the, you know, boxes on my checklist, you know, lace, beading, whatever it is. But you have, you know, if you're not a very like fashion-y person in the sense that like it's not that important to you, like that's not the main detail, then if you love the dress and you're happy with it, then go for it. But, you know, if you want to and you have time to keep trying and seeing if there's something similar that maybe gives you that, oh my God, moment, then take the time to do that. But I've seen it. Like, I've been with friends shopping for dresses, and I'm like, you'll just feel it. And one of my friends, she's super granola. She's not like a bride's bride in any way. And I'll never forget when she put this dress on, and it was a very minimalist dress. It was very hard. And she looked at me, and she went, I feel something. And she just knew it was her dress. And I'll never forget that moment. And I think that there is something in choosing that dress that you will feel like, I never want to take it off, or this is the most beautiful dress I've ever seen and tried on. But that being said, you might not be into the dress. You know, you might be more into the food or into the music. So if you're really happy with the dress, then wear the dress. But don't feel that other people saying, do you love it? And you're like, I don't really like
it. I like it,
but I don't love it. But you still want to buy it? Then buy it.
I don't want to make love to it.
They're just trying to be excited for you. You know, I don't think they're doing it in a malicious way to be like, well, if you don't love it, then it's not right. Like, just if you love it and you think it's right for whatever reason, then that's your dress.
Agreed.
I feel like the women that do feel that moment, because I didn't feel a moment where I was like, this is, oh my gosh, I didn't feel that. I felt that way before about skinny jeans one time, and that was a moment, I recall it. But I didn't get that those dress butterflies, and I kind of understand where this bride is coming from, because I did feel like, oh, did I miss the boat? Like, it's gone now, I'm wearing this dress, and other people like you're talking about this moment. I didn't feel that, but the circumstances just weren't all lined up. And
you were pregnant.
I wish I had been able to feel that. I expected to feel that. So I do understand the pressure a little bit.
Did you feel beautiful in it?
Yes, I did. But again, it wasn't, I guess it wasn't what I always envisioned, you know, and I think this bride coming from just that place of like, well, do I love it? I think I love mm-hmm. it, but everyone else mm-hmm. seems to be like, did you get goosebumps all over your entire body? And I think she feels like wistful for that. You
and
know?
Look, everybody's different.
Which I get.
No, and the thing is, everything's been like fairy tale-ized through the whole process. Mm-hmm. And some mm-hmm. people are going to have those fairy tale moments for certain things. And some people are going to have it for others. You know, like some people yeah. like dancing with their dad is going to bring tears to their eyes and tears to their dad's eyes. And some people don't have that type of relationship. And that's fine. But that's who you are, and if that's a dress that you really like and you think you want to wear it on your wedding day for whatever reason and it fits your budget and you feel beautiful in it, mm-hmm. then go for it.
And then the other thing, like you said, Anne, if you're a person that is not really into clothes and fashion, chances are you don't place that much importance on, you know, like, you know, I don't love clothes, you know, like I don't love, like I feel good in it. Right. I look good, but I don't love my dress.
Then that's you.
And that's okay.
And if that's you, then you can make your decision and just move on. And it should feel, yeah. if nothing else, it should feel liberating that you made the decision on your dress and now you can move on. And
cross it off your list. Exactly. Like Done. If it's more important to have like that best food you've ever had in your life, then focus on what's important to you. No one is going to walk down the aisle and say, oh, she looks hideous, because they love you and they just want to be there for you. And they might not personally like the dress for themselves, but you never hear anyone say she was an ugly bride. It's like no one ever says that's an ugly baby, except maybe on right. Seinfeld.
To their well, face. But, to the
but
baby's
no one's
face.
Gonna do yeah. that. No one's going to walk down the aisle and say, Mazel yeah. Tov, you look horrible.
Yeah, you're not. No one's critical in that moment. Okay, the last question I have, it says, lesbian bride here. I want to wear a suit and I can't find one that I love. I can't find one that fits perfectly. I'm thinking of going with separates from Banana Republic, slacks and a vest. But the look I like is black slacks and a gray vest. Is there something about that, the not matching, that will make my outfit less formal? My fiance is wearing a princess style wedding dress. So this goes to your coordinating
right.
comments from
exactly.
last time.
The most important thing is that yeah. you match in formality. You don't want to look like the bride and a guest. You want to look like the bride and the bride. And you should find if she's wearing a princess gown, then maybe you should be wearing tuxedo pants or something in a finer fabric than maybe what you'll find at Banner Republic. You might want to splurge and have a suit tailor-made. You know, you can go to a store that's known for really great suiting construction for men and women, like Brooks Brothers. You know, you want to go, or you can go to, like, Thomas Pink, which has, like, really nice tailored shirts. Or you can go the route of getting something custom-made. But I think the most important thing isn't that the gray and the black, which I'm sure look lovely together, but it's just that what you put together for your wedding day look is within the formality that matches your fiance's, because you don't want to look as if you're not the couple and the newlyweds. So that's the main thing.
So gray and black works.
Yeah, gray and black works.
That is not less formal. It's just up the ante on the fabric.
On the fabric.
Fitting,
yeah.
The accessories.
Yes. And I don't know if Banana Republic is going to have that formal finish in their suiting options or separates options. I would go to some department stores and I would call some tailors to see if they can make a jacket, a vest, and a pants in a fabric that looks and feels formal.
I also think that one way for women who are wearing suits or tuxes on the wedding day, a lot of times I see the top button unbuttoned with a vest, which I think is super sexy and looks great. But that, I feel like, is less formal if your bride is wearing a princess dress. Even if you're wearing tuxedo pants, to unbutton the top 2-3 buttons of the white shirt and kind of leave the collar open, that I think it's beautiful, but it does feel a little relaxed to me. But it's hard with a woman because she doesn't necessarily want the buttons all the way up to the top
and
with
she's
a
not
bow
wearing
tie.
A tie. Well, if you think.
Yeah, so you can do other accessories.
Ellen DeGeneres, when she married Portia de Rossi, and Portia was in a real kind of princess tulle skirted gown with a satiny kind of halter. It was all, both looks were custom by Zac Posen. She wore white pants and a shirt, and I think it was opened a little bit at the neckline. And it wasn't like a jacket and a tie in a traditional tuxedo sense, but the material matched and complemented the bride's look. And that's what's kind of important. And like, you know, maybe you find a fabric or a color that matches the bride's dress, so you're both in ivory or you're both in white, which would definitely aid in the formality of mm-hmm. the look that you're going for.
I love vest under jacket too. And I think for a woman that works well, because then you could take off the jacket, but you still got that right. vest. And I don't know, I think it looks really great. And this is a common problem for lesbians, because, and we had Bernadette Smith on.
Is she still doing her line of suiting for women?
No, she's not, but there are some really amazing, there's two companies out of the Bay Area. I'll actually include, I can't think of them off the top of my head, but that Bernadette talks about when she does go into the fashion part about weddings.
Yeah.
So I'll include, just because we're talking about it, a link to Bernadette's website, and then also a link to these suiting companies, because it was made by a woman getting married who couldn't find anything she wanted to wear, and it's available now online as well. So
yeah, tailoring a suit to a woman's body is a whole nother.
Yeah. You can't just like go to like a department and just say, I'll just take this.
And I've had actually several of my brides go to rent their suits and tuxes at either Men's Warehouse or a bridal salon that does suits as well. And no matter how the good intentions of the tailor, who's like, yes, totally, I am inclusive and would love to do this, they've all, across the board, and this is in North Texas, have had experiences that were just like, hey, the person was nice. It wasn't like they were anti-gay
marriage. Right.
They weren't making any big statement, but these boobs, they had never measured them before. Right. And therefore, my vest and jacket basically look like I'm playing in my dad's closet. And it wasn't for any lack of trying. I think you do have to find a specialist or someone who does this and knows what they're doing.
Who does women's tailoring.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a completely different figure.
And that's not going to be at a Men's Warehouse.
There's one in Boston, too, called Nine Tailors. And that's actually one that Bernadette recommends, I believe.
I would trust anyone she recommends. So. Yeah, she's so good. But maybe they have online stuff. Like, you can call someone in San Francisco or Boston and be like, tell me how to take my measurements.
Send them.
And then send it to me from there. It's not like a dress fitting necessarily, where you have to do like a muslin and all those different things. And then you can find a local tailor in your market who can finish it up to make sure that it fits you perfectly.
Yeah.
And some of the online bespoke places do that as well. And they send you a very detailed list of what measurements to take, with sometimes with video on how exactly... wear on your arm, wear on your chest. So lots of options. But to answer this question, we love the idea of a vest and slacks. It's just, you got to up the ante to meet your bride in this case.
So I have a few here. okay. How are couples thanking and spending time with guests at the wedding? If receiving lines and table visits are out, what's in?
Well, I don't think table visits are out specifically. And the thing with receiving lines is that they just take forever. So you want to make sure that like you're schmoozing and mingling with your guests during cocktail hour and talking to as many of them as you can. Receiving lines are basically out because people don't want to be standing on a line just shaking hands with people. What they want to do is have like an interesting and memorable conversation with their guests. And with table visits, you don't want to make it look like you're just there to collect their gifts or their checks. So with cocktail hour, it gives you an opportunity to mingle and mix with your guests and have some of those conversations. And then the other thing is that you should make an effort to walk the room and make sure that, you know, your guests are having a good time and have an opportunity to see all those other people that you haven't seen at the cocktail hour. So I think what you want to do is you want to basically plan your reception. So either you're having a formal dinner so that you can have conversations with people and then plan dancing later, or plan an after party for dancing with a lot of your younger guests so you focus some more time on your older guests. But the other thing is, so many people now are having wedding weekends where they can spend time with their guests over the length of a weekend at a welcome party, at the rehearsal dinner, at the farewell brunch, so that you don't feel the pressure like, okay, I have 4 hours to talk to 300 people. And you can kind of spread it out so that if you spend a lot of time, let's say at the welcome dinner talking to Uncle Joe and Aunt Edith, you know, you don't feel the pressure to spend the same amount of time with them at the wedding, and then you can focus on some other people.
I do think with that, it sounds obvious, but the more people, the more guests you invite, the harder it is to have any face-to-face time with every guest. But I did just attend a wedding as a guest. Just as only a guest, like I didn't do anything. I didn't even like touch a centerpiece. Woo! It was weird and wonderful. But they had about 200 people, and it was not a weekend. It was like these people were here for that day. They did something that I've seen in other weddings, but I've never seen it done to this extent before. During their ceremony, because a lot of ceremonies I'm seeing, and I think this is a trend right now and I love it, is in the ceremonies is acknowledging your guests. A lot of times we see it as like the officiant might ask the guests, like, do you, their friends and family or their loved ones, do you vow to support them in marriage and be there for them, whatever?
I love that.
And people say like, we do, or yes, or whatever. And I see that a lot and I love it. But what this...
He's a moron.
Yeah, woo! Oh, what this couple did was...
I want to go to that wedding.
They turned their officiant, and they had this planned out, and it was actually really important to the couple. I know they wrote it themselves, but it was wonderful. The officiant had them turn to their guests. So all of us guests are just sitting in there like we're so happy for them and we're all just smiling. And they turned to us and the officiant said this paragraph. It was so beautiful. Something like, take this moment to, she's saying this to the bride and groom, like, take this moment and look at all of these people who are here for you. I'm going to cry. You know, I am.
I see
I always
it.
Do this,
you're crying. She's
who
crying.
Are, who are here for you and who love you and who want you to succeed in this journey that you're taking together, and really take it in. And she like, I'm saying for like a full 60 seconds, no joke. I mean, it felt like the whole room was experiencing this thing together. And the bride and groom met eye contact, I want to say, with every person. I mean, you could see their eyes just tracking, and they both kind of teared up. And there was not a dry eye in the house. Like everyone, because this is, they're both 38, I think, 39 years old. First marriage for both of them. They had a lot of friends there. So a lot of peers, a lot of people our age. And it was like, it was an experience for real. And I thought, they kind of don't, it's okay if she doesn't make it over to our table, because I'm better friends with the groom. It's okay if she doesn't make it over to our table to hug all of us. I did get a hug from her and some FaceTime with her, but we had that moment, and they took that time and were really conscious about taking that time to acknowledge everyone and to silently thank everyone.
It's really beautiful.
I love
and it
that.
Was really cool.
What a great officiant. So, that was a really, was that a friend?
It was a friend. It was a friend, and they all wrote the ceremony together. And I'm getting a copy of the script because I loved the wording of it so much. And I thought, mm-hmm. especially for my couples who have giant weddings and who are kind of, it is kind of daunting to be like, oh my God, we have 300 people. How are we going to thank everyone for coming? This is not just like a blanket, like, hey, thanks, you guys. We're so glad you're here. But it really felt like an important moment. And I know it was a profound moment for the bride and groom. So that's something else to consider, is that you can sometimes all it takes, all that's necessary is eye contact with someone to be like, I see you. I see that you're here. And I'm going to remember this moment. So I thought that was pretty special.
That's so beautiful. And I think the other thing is that guests know that you have a lot going on. Like, there are a lot of things you have to do as part of the wedding, like cutting the cake and dancing and all of that. So there's very few people that'll kind of be like, they didn't come over to me, you know? So I think you have to realize that it's okay if you don't hit everyone, especially like you said, like if you're a friend of the groom, then the bride may not circle over to you. But if the groom circles over to you, great, because that's your friend.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't stress too much about it. But that's a beautiful story, and that's a beautiful way to really acknowledge your guests.
Yeah. I this question, I know who's asking this question, and I want to see what your advice okay. is to her, because part of this is that her parents are very traditional. She's Chinese. The groom is not. And so her parents are expecting her to have like a receiving line, right? And she's like, absolutely, I'm not having receiving line. Like, I don't want to do that. I'm not into it. And also, I'm really not into walking around to the tables. Like, so what she said is, let's have a 90-minute cocktail reception. Well, her parents feel that 90 minutes is too long and that people will leave. I don't think anybody, that's what I said. I said, nobody's leaving. And she said, well, my parents probably, because, you know, Chinese culture, there's certain things, especially with the elders, that are expected. And I've done a lot of Chinese weddings. So my thing was, okay, why don't you just compromise? Let's do a 75-minute cocktail reception. And you're at the cocktail reception. Oh, and the other thing is that the parents want a lot of posed photos right after the ceremony. So that's going to cut into cocktail reception, which is why she wants a 90-minute cocktail reception. But her parents aren't into that. And parents are paying for the wedding. And she wants to make them happy. So I said, we're going to have a list of photos. We're going to have to... The parents are going to have to compromise a little bit. It can't be a ton of photos. And perhaps we split up the photos. Some of them are done later. But you do, you know, 20 minutes of photos, then come down to cocktail and make it a 75-minute cocktail reception. Spend as much time as you can walking around to all your guests at cocktail.
Because that's their version for dinner. Of the receiving line, kind of, is
because
mingling.
That would be their version. Okay. Because she's like, I don't want to not eat dinner.
Right.
And I don't want a receiving line. And I don't blame her. Like, I agree. Yeah. So that's kind of what we're trying to compromise with.
I think your reasoning makes perfect sense. I think you try to get as much done photo-wise before the ceremony and before cocktail hour. So the bride and groom aren't spending their entire cocktail hour taking photos. If you want that traditional mm-hmm. element where you don't want to take the bride and groom photos, then take all the bride and her family beforehand and yep. the groom and his family beforehand, and then you have mainly the bride and groom photos to take,
the mixed
and then
families.
A couple of mixed, I mean yeah. how many mixed family photos are you taking? You know, you take a picture, it's yeah. one picture, maybe you take it with both sets of parents and stuff like that. So I think that as long as you can get done as much as you can before the ceremony, you're going to be in better shape. I mean, look, if your parents are being like sticklers about it and they're paying and you don't want to go and do something that's going to be against their wishes, then the 75 minutes is a really nice compromise. But maybe you can also say to the catering and vacation and venue place, I need a vacation. then maybe you want to say to them, look, we're going to do 75 minutes, but there's a 50-50 chance we might want to extend by 15 minutes. And make it mm-hmm. 90.
And have that on the back
and then
burner.
If you have to, yeah, you have idea. To.
Right.
I mean, I don't
right.
want to say, like, go behind your parents' back and just say, yeah, 75, and then say to the caterer, like, wink and a nod and be like, actually 90. But that's what I would do. Gotcha. And I don't know if someone else, yeah. depending on your relationship with your parents, if they're going to get pissed off at you. But in the middle of the whole mm-hmm. wedding and everything, I can't imagine your parents, like, with a stopwatch on their phone being like, my iPhone says we're at 76
no.
minutes.
No, it's all about right. the pre-plans. Once they're at the wedding, I think they'll be a little bit more like just going with the flow. What were you going
to
say, Christy?
My first thought with any long cocktail hour, which a lot of times we have to do that for various reasons, yep. is make sure there's heavy food and drink and people mm-hmm. are happy. Past apps always help with that. And then also, because I've done a couple of... a Korean wedding and a Chinese wedding where the photos are very important and the women of the family are really like decked out and sometimes they change after the photos. So it's like, we need these photos and they need to be right after the ceremony. But what's helped, and this might already not be an issue, but there are photographers who specialize or like have a niche market. And so if your wedding is a very traditional Chinese wedding, then look and see if there's a photographer that does a lot of traditional Chinese weddings, maybe even speaks Mandarin or, you know, like on his website or her website has a ton of what you kind of imagine you want your formal photos to be. And I say that only because that post ceremony time in any wedding is really crunchy for the photographer and the planner. It's like the only time of the day of the wedding that I'm always like, oh, let's just get through this. You're wrangling people. Where's Aunt Sally? Sit down. We told you to stay. You're not in the picture. Get out of here. Yes, we will all go to cocktail hour soon. So the more organized you can be going into it, the better, which is why, Michelle, you're planning this like photo list that's very detailed. But it also helps if the photographer is more than just in the loop on that, but is going to actually be directing it, or they have an assistant who is going to be helping with that.
And I think you made a really good point about having extra food for the guests. Like, have interactive things for the guests, whether it's like food trucks for them to interact with, or a photo booth for them to take pictures, or a creative guest book for them to like write messages, like something to keep them busy, make sure there's music. Because if it gets to the point where it's like, they're like, why are we still here? There's no more food.
Can we sit?
Like, there's not enough chairs. Yeah. Like, you want to make sure that they're going to be having a good time.
Very good. Thank you, ladies.
Problem solved.
Problem solved. Done. All right. Here's another one. Registries.
Love registry.
So much controversy on universal registries. Experience registries, i.e. cash. And my impression is that this is also very regional. Lots of East Coast weddings just give cash, West Coast more physical gifts, etc. What do you see, Anne, working well from both couples and guests' perspective?
Well, I think the main thing is that the couple should pick two or three places to register. One with traditional gifts. One that's
Crate and Barrel.
Right, Crate and Barrel, Macy's, Bed Bath & Beyond, Bloomingdale's, where you have the traditional stuff. And
for grandma and grandpa who are like, we have to get you a mixer.
Yep.
That's what we do for all of our...
All the grandkids get a mixer.
And we're going to do that for you whether you want it or
exactly. not. Exactly. So you better pick something out that you like. Otherwise, you're going to get crap that you don't want.
Because when you register with the traditional places and people go off registry, it's very easy to return and then get what you wanted.
Exactly.
So that's a benefit.
Exactly. And there's also like other perks that they give you, like discounts and other departments and all that kind of stuff. Then you can register for experience gifts, which can be stuff that you do on your honeymoon, like couples massages or dinners. But then you can also register for things that you can do locally, like bike rides or wine tastings or tickets to a concert. So that can be like a fun thing to do. And then the third one can be anything you want. It can be charitable. Like you say, you know what, if we really don't need much, but, you know, if you want to give something, you can donate to the Red Cross or the ACLU or whatever organization you're supporting. And then you can also do like a hobby gift where you're registering at like a sporting store that has like things that are of interest to you, like maybe REI or... you love wine, so you're going to register at a wine store so people can buy you bottles of wine. So you can do those kinds of very specific things. Now, when it comes to cash registries, I have issues with cash registries because, yes, in some cultures, like, you know, like Italian weddings, Jewish weddings, a lot of other weddings, like, it's traditional that you get a tangible gift at the shower, but you get cash or a check.
An envelope.
At the wedding.
Oh, got it.
Yeah.
But if that's not your background and you want to encourage cash, then there are great places where you can register for cash. But I think it's extremely important that you make it clear what that money's being used for. You know, like, you know, we're trying to save up to buy a home. You know, please help us, you know, build our, you know, nest or something like that. Because you don't want to be like... Dude, I want the new Xbox. Give me $300.
You could put that on your wedding registry.
Right.
Or your wedding website.
On your wedding website.
Right?
Like or through the registry.
We're trying to save. Or
like some of the cash registries will let you say what the money's being used for.
Put a little note in there.
And I think that it's really important that you say more than like, you know, like what's that song? Like, I want money. Lots and lots of money.
Yeah.
Remember from like the 80s and 90s?
I want money.
Right. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not nice to ask for money, I don't think. Unless, like you said, like this is a fund because we want to buy
a home
together.
Yeah, or we're renovating our home. You so know. You can give us like money towards that. Or we're also registered at Home Depot.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
so
yes.
You don't want to look like you're just like, come and give me money.
Just give me cash.
Yeah, giving people at least one, two or three is better, but at least one place to go buy something, whether it's Home Depot or REI, which are like, oh, that's a weird way to registry. But it's something better than... Not better than, but for some people, for some guests, they'll feel more comfortable doing that than just writing you a check.
Well, I think the biggest mistake that couples make is that they assume if they don't register, people will just automatically give them cash. And that's not the case for a lot of reasons. You know, one, you might have a traditionalist personality where they're like, I'm going to buy them china or a vase. And then you're stuck with something that you would never use and possibly can't exchange because it's not from a store that you can or you know. The other thing is that you can't assume that people are going to give you cash because of what's in their personal budget. You know, if they can only afford $25, they're not going to give you $25, and they might be embarrassed about that. But they can go to a store and buy you a $25 picture frame or something for $25 on your registry, and then they won't have that negative feeling. And you, like, I know, like, I received like $20 from a college friend at my wedding. But I knew she had just graduated. Like, literally, it was a $20 bill. And it's totally fine, and I get it. And when I went to their wedding, I gave them a lot more than $20 because we were a lot older. But I think if you go to the registry and you buy something within your budget versus giving cash within that kind of $25 budget, it seems a little bit warmer and a little bit more thoughtful that you actually went to the store and went shopping and said, you know what, I think they're really going to love this.
I agree. All right, so the consensus is buy some or register at like one like store, right? And then like perhaps some sort of maybe even for a honeymoon fund. And then I always like I had a couple ask me like I want to do registry, but then I also want to give them the option of donating money. I feel like when you throw out those two options, I don't know, me personally, I have this whole like moral thing. I'm like, geez. Do I do both? I kind of do both.
Really?
Like you feel like obligated to do both because you're like, I want to give him a gift, but like now I'm forced with this like moral dilemma to like donate money to a cause. You know, like I don't know why personally, and maybe that's just me being weird, but to give those two options,
you wouldn't
have to choose between.
Yeah, you wouldn't feel comfortable just donating to the cause. That's the thing.
No, because I'd want to give them, because they obviously want a gift.
You could give $50 to Planned Parenthood, but then you'd also want them to know, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You thought of.
Well, the good thing is there's lots of opportunities to give, because there's the engagement party, there's the bridal shower, and then there's the wedding.
True. Very true.
So you can give a tangible item for one of those other parties and then give to charity for the other. You know, the other thing is you might not agree with the charity that the couple wants.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you might, but you might not, you know, for whatever reason. I know there was one couple that registered with Barack Obama's like 2012 re-election campaign. And I mean, I know a lot of those people are most likely supporting Obama in 2012, but not all of them. So you might not feel comfortable doing that.
That's quite a statement. Like, I mean, I kind of dig it, like, because that couple has some balls just to be like, well, that's what we're into right now. It's very important to us, but that is.
I remember my parents sent me an email and they're like, have you ever heard of this? I'm like, you can register for anything.
Yeah, it's not like, it's not just like a universal cause. It's a very specific political.
But like the other thing, like you might put something to donate to Planned Parenthood. And there might be people who are like, I'm not doing that. And on the other side, there might be some sort of right to life, you know, charity. And some people might be like, I'm not giving to that. Cause you never know what people's personal views are.
You're like, then don't come to my wedding.
Exactly.
We're running out of time. Let me get this last one in here. Okay. Still talking about gifts. What's the protocol on wedding gifts to my guests?
Oh, like favors?
How much should I spend? Should I give the gift at the wedding or is it okay to give it into baskets before the wedding? So this is a couple who's getting married. It's going to be a whole wedding weekend. And so I think what he's saying is, you know, I think he's going to, I think he's going to give lots of lovely things is what I think these two guys are going to do. But anyway, he wants to give wedding gifts to the guests. The question of how much to spend, that I would say, Anne, and I don't know if you'd, I mean, I would say it just depends on your wedding budget, right? Like,
agreed.
Yeah. And favors, I'm not seeing, are you guys seeing favors anymore?
Seeing them in creative and unique ways. You know, edible favors are always going to be popular, whether there's cookies with like your names on it, whether it's like a box of donuts on the way that you're leaving. I love edible favors because it's something people will actually use, where like a tchotchke will most likely end up in the garbage.
Mm-hmm. And half of them will be just left there.
Yeah. But I think if you're having like a wedding weekend and people are traveling to it and you want to have some sort of like welcome gift or hospitality when people arrive, it'll depend on your budget what you want to give and where you are. So if it's a destination and like let's say you're in the beach, maybe you want to give everybody some sort of like tote or beach bag with sunscreen and a bottle of water or maybe some sort of like cocktail kind of thing. You might want to include like information about the local area.
A tote is so fun for destination weddings because if they come on Friday, then they use the tote
for the whole weekend.
Go out, and then everyone's like, "Oh, you're going to the wedding. I'm going to the wedding." And it's useful and fun, and it has the groom and groom's name on it. So
everyone loves a good tote,
even if they only put like granola bars in it. The tote is such a great like welcome gift.
Yeah. And I mean, you can go to like map tote where you can have like a map of the location where you're getting married, whether it's an urban area or a state or an island or Europe or something like that. But I think with welcome gifts, it's really going to depend on your budget, because if let's say you live in Des Moines and people are just coming in from out of town to come to your wedding in Des Moines, you might want to come up with some local foods and a note that says, "Welcome to our wedding. We're really excited for you to be here. Enjoy one of our favorite local Iowa treats." And that could be part of your gifting to your guests.
So at the wedding, you don't think if it's a wedding weekend like these guys are having, it's good to give it to them at the rehearsal dinner or as they check into the hotel.
Yes.
And then at the wedding itself, just make it like an edible type of little like favor or something.
Yeah. I like edible favors personally. Yeah. I think they're things that aren't going to get tossed. Another really great idea are music favors. And obviously we're not doing like CDs. You can get really cool looking USBs. Like I have a USB somewhere. I'm looking to see if I can find it, but not that you can see. You can see it, but listening, you can't see it. But it looks like a cassette tape.
You guys can see this, right?
And it says a summer mixtape or something, and it's a USB. Like the thing comes down.
Oh, that's cute.
So you can find USBs in different shapes, and you can make it like a mixtape for them to download when they get home.
Yeah, that's really cute, because a lot of times people have, drove rental cars in or whatever.
Yeah.
And now they almost all have USBs, and you can plug it in and listen to your music.
And listen. Yeah. And I think that that's really fun, because you can do that for all ages. And the thing is, now, because you're not like burning CDs, you could do it for the different generations. You know, like my grandmother's 90th birthday, we did a Michael Bublé, Frank Sinatra mix USB. But, maybe for the younger people, you give them something that's more in line with what they would like.
Mm-hmm.
And they could all have the same USB. It's just different playlists on it.
Or that's going to be stuff that was played at your wedding.
Mm-hmm.
One more question. Is it okay to fire a bridesmaid or, for that matter, groomsman?
I think it depends on the role. I don't think you fire a bridesmaid or a groomsman because they can't afford to be in your bridal party. You try to work with them on their budget. I think you can ask them to step down if your friendship sours or they're not, I don't want to say they're not as happy for you, but like if there's issues going on and you're just like, this is like becoming a toxic relationship and you're just not really talking to them, I think it's okay to be like, look, I know that, we haven't gotten along lately. I'd be okay if you want to step down, because
I don't want it to be awkward on my wedding day.
You don't want it to be awkward. You don't want it to be weird. Like, let's say it's your bridesmaid is your sister and the groomsman is the brother-in-law, and now all of a sudden they're getting divorced.
Ooh.
It might be weird. Like, there's all sorts of scenarios. I think if it's someone that you're just kind of losing touch with, but it's not like a adversarial relationship, just leave them in. But I think if it's a budget issue where they're like, I can't afford this dress or I can't afford this trip to your bachelorette party, you work with them and say, I'll either help pay for it with you or let's find a way to make this work. Let's find a dress that we can make this work.
That happens a lot. Mm-hmm. That happens a lot. Like you said, it's like average $1,200.
Yeah. And if you're in five weddings, I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah. Excellent. Wow. That went by fast.
Always does.
Always does. Always does. It was so fun to have you, Anne. Thank you so, 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 so much for being here again.
Thank you for having me. It's always fun chatting with you guys.
For those of you who have any other questions or comments, we are on Twitter, and Christy would love to hear from you. What is it?
Twitter at TBWP podcast. And our email is thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. And we are on Facebook. And Michelle is Allure Consulting, and I'm Christy Matthews Events, and we post a lot of our podcast stuff on our Instagrams as well. So check it.
And thank you, Wedding Wire, right? And you are the trends expert for Wedding Wire.
Yep. I'm the Wedding Wire trends expert for Wedding Wire. We have tons of stories coming out in the fall and starting actually this month on all the hot trends and what's going on in weddings for this year, the end of this year and into 2018.
I love winter weddings, so I can't wait to delve into all of that wintry inspiration.
Yep. Yeah, so get onto Wedding Wire. Use all of their awesome tools. They have really great tools, not only just for planning the wedding, but for like, you know, Snapchat filters and an app and like all kinds of cool stuff. So check it out. Thank you again, Anne. Christy.
Always a pleasure.
I will talk to you probably like today, tomorrow. We'll be texting, you know, all that good stuff. All right. Happy planning, everybody. And see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.